I think theming gives your day more purpose. And when you have more purpose, you're going to be more productive.
Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. When I speak to dentists, one of the common challenges that comes up all the time is, how do I get stuff done? I'm running my practice by day doing dentistry, but I'm trying to do the other bits and pieces, all the admin and the tasks by night. And that can leave dentists and practice owners in particular feeling a bit stressed, burnt out, overwhelmed. And ultimately, the whole journey of practice ownership becomes a lot less fun because the freedom that we all craved when we went into business somehow feels to have disappeared, and we're mired in the day-to-day stuff. So in today's episode, we're having a conversation with Mike Vardy, who's a productivity specialist and strategist, to help get out of that quagmire. In the episode, we talk about a lot of techniques and tips and tools and tricks to help your day be really productive, but not just productive, really fun and enjoyable too, because productivity without the enjoyment is still a bit of a slog. So in this conversation, Mike covers a whole heap of territory. He talks about not just getting your time management sort of stuff set up. He talks a lot about how to use that time so you get every bit of productivity out of the allocated time. He's going to talk a bit about routines. He's going to talk a lot about theming. He's going to talk a lot about how to set up your calendar properly. He's going to cover an enormous amount of territory in this conversation. It's a lot of fun. On top of that, Mike's a really nice man, a really funny guy, actually. We had a whole conversation off air that was probably as long or longer than this interview, but I hope you really enjoy the tips and tricks and tools that Mike shares, because I guarantee you, if you apply them in your practice, your days will be more productive, more enjoyable, more fulfilling, and your business will go to another level. So without any further ado, here's Mike Vardy.
Mike Vardy, welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. Thanks so much for coming on the show. It's an absolute pleasure to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Jesse.
You're really welcome. I'm really grateful that you've taken the time out of your day to come and spend some time with us. Mike, you are known as the productivity guy. You know, you've got this great website and resources called The Productivityist, and I always, whenever I say that, I have to really make sure I enunciate very carefully. But you know, you've got some really wonderful information, some great resources, and I've been across your stuff for a little while now. And one of the things I really wanted to just start our conversation with is just a little bit about your backstory, because how did you come to be a productivity specialist? Were you always that way inclined, or has it been a bit of an evolution for you?
I think it's a combination of both, to be honest, Jesse. I mean, I started working for Costco years ago, almost right out of high school. And I worked for Costco for about 11, 12 years. And I had to be very cognizant of time, because by the time I moved out to the West Coast, so I grew up near Toronto, and then by the time I moved out to the West Coast, I ended up running two departments. If you've been to a Costco before, you know, there's the hot dog stand area where all the hot dogs and fries are served. I ran that area, and then I ran the service deli area, which is where the rotisserie chickens are. Two very different types of departments. One is more of a impulse buy, you know, customer service oriented. The other one's more of a manufacturing. You need to have enough stock on the shelves, et cetera. So I had to start there. And then as I navigated my way through and eventually out of Costco, I found that having those skills, it was really valuable in other aspects of my life, as I was trying to build a comedy career, as I was trying to start a family. And when I took it to the online world, initially I took it online as a parody thing, because there was just so many productivity sites out there that were just going overboard with it. And I created a site called Eventualism, and it was all about getting things done eventually. And what happened was, because I was trying to do comedy, and comedy doesn't pay very well, it was a struggle, but I still went all in. I asked people like Seth Godin and David Allen to be on the show. And when David Allen was on, I had a podcast and he was on my show. He said, you know, do you want to write for me? And I said, sure, I'll write for your blog. And he said, that's great. You're informative, entertaining. Just don't make fun of me. And I said, yeah, I could do that. And it, that's what's happened is I evolved into the very thing I was parodying. I've become a productivity. I went from an enthusiast to a specialist. And now I consider myself to be a productivity strategist because I have my own methodologies that I teach. And so that's kind of what's happened. So I think I've always been inclined to be, you know, productive in one form or another, but I haven't really dove headstrong into it other than the past decade is when I've really kind of dove into it.
Yeah, well, so there's a lot of lessons in that already. And one of the ones that's ringing true for me is be careful what you parody, I suppose, isn't it?
But... Yeah. Well, funny thing is I because it wasn't a lucrative venture, I wasn't able to go as all into it as others have. Like there's that guy, JP Sears, I think is his name. He's the guy with the long red hair and does the yoga stuff and all that. He's gone all in and he's fantastically funny. I wasn't even a fraction close to that. So yeah, I mean, if you start to parody something, first off, you got to know it and you got to know it well. And, you know, I mean, for me, it worked out really well because I, you know, I'm able to help people out. I'm able to inform, entertain, and, you know, make a living for my family. So I kind of get the best of both worlds here.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's a really interesting journey because it's very atypical, of course. But as we kind of, you know, get into the productivity stuff that, of course, we're going to be speaking about today, I'm sure you see this all the time. You know, small business owners, medium-sized business owners, they generally, one of the most common complaints I see anyway, is that they seem to be running their business by day, doing their service delivery, in our case, dentist, doing dentistry by day, but then trying to fit in all these other things around that so that their time kind of gets squished and squashed. And all of a sudden, it feels like they're working, you know, long hours, not getting as much enjoyment out of it. Things become suddenly a whole lot less fun. I'm sure that's not an uncommon tale, but what do you see as the reason for that? And I guess the next follow-up thing would be, how do you fix it?
Well, I think one of the things that people do is, and this is across the gamut what people do, is they don't recognize that they only have so much time in the day. And instead of compartmentalizing their day and figuring out what they should be doing on given days, they just kind of, it's like putting a jigsaw puzzle together. Instead of sitting back and working on the edge pieces first and then maybe grouping everything by the different parts of the puzzle so that you know, okay, well, these are all the green parts, so let's group those together and then hopefully we'll be able to put the puzzle. There, you're basically just saying, let me see what I can put together. And the problem is that it takes a whole lot longer to put the puzzle together and it's not as fun because you're getting frustrated. And so what I think that one of the things that people need to do, and this is what one of the things I teach both through my writing and through my coaching and even through some of the classes and courses I teach, is the idea of theming your time. So giving your time meaning. And what's interesting is in your profession, I would imagine, is, you know, when you go into an appointment, you have a, I wouldn't say maybe you know exactly what you're going to do, but you have a very good idea of what you're going to do. And so that gives you the ability to focus on it. If you just went into an appointment and said, this person has teeth and that's it, you would be like, okay, well, what about those teeth? But if you're like, hey, you know what? This is a root canal. It's going to be at this particular tooth and so on. You're going to be able to go in there and deal with it as effectively as you can. Sometimes other things can get in the way with in terms of efficiency, but we don't do that with our days enough. We don't. So when people, and I have a lot of people who are running appointment-based businesses, so they don't have, they have control over their day, but only to a point, is between those appointments, they get stuck. They say, oh, I've only got a half hour between this appointment and that appointment. What do? I know I'll check email or I'll jump on Facebook or whatever, and they're not moving their real intentions forward. And so when you theme your time, what you say is, okay, so let's say today is a Thursday. Thursday has an overarching meaning of, let's say it's going to be your report writing day, let's say. And that's when you focus on your report writing. Well, when you're not in an appointment or you're not doing a certain thing, then you'll work on reports. And then when the next appointment comes up, you'll deal with that appointment. And then you'll go back to writing reports. So you have this trigger that pulls you back to where your time should be spent. And you can do this outside of work too. I have a lot of people that say, well, yeah, that's all well and good for inside of work, but what about outside of work? Or they'll say, I can't theme my work day because it's too dynamic. And I'm like, well, what about the 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. spot or the 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. spot? What about after work? Do you just come home and do nothing? Well, no. I you know, I watch TV and all that stuff. I'm like, well, what if you want to be more well-read? What if you want to exercise? Like, I think theming gives your day more purpose. And when you have more purpose, you're going to be more productive.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, it's really funny you should talk about theming because it's something that I've got in my diary as well, which I've obviously learned from you. But one of the things that I found as well, and again, I'm really interested in your comment and feedback around this, is for me, I found that there were some days that was easier to do one theme over another. So I had to make sure I put the right theme on the right day, essentially, is what I'm trying to say. And so you're like Monday morning report writing would probably be a little tricky for me in just getting started in the week, you know. And so, you know, do you find that there are different themes that suit different days of the week, or is it just everyone's individual preference?
When I focus on productivity, I try to put the personal back into it, because I think what's happened with productivity is it's been such a divisive term because people think it's about getting as much done as possible as quickly as possible. And I believe productivity, the way I call it, the personal productivity equation, it's intention plus attention. That equals productivity. So what are your intentions? Okay, these are them. How are you going to pay attention to them? What framework are you going to place? What triggers, what boundaries? So that way you can pay attention to them. When you do that, you create a more personalized productivity approach. So for you, Monday may not be the best day to do reports, but for me, it's a great day to do reports because no one's really bugging me. They're busy answering emails, and I just want to ease back into the week, and I want to have something that drives me as opposed to having to create something on my own. So that might be a great one for me. But when you're theming your days, there's two things that you need to really keep in mind. And I think this goes whether you're doing daily theming, which is, you know, vertical, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, all the way through Sunday, or horizontal theming, which is the idea of theming your time blocks. So 9 to 11, that kind of thing. Number one, always work backwards from your certainties. So you're not going to, if you have, do you have kids, Jesse?
Yes, I do. I've got two daughters.
All right. So, and they're both school-aged kids?
Yep.
Okay. So you are not going to record this podcast generally in the middle of the, like on a Saturday. You're really not going to do that. Why? Because you could. It might not make you the greatest dad in the world because you'd be telling your kids to be quiet. But the bottom line is that's not a good thing for you to do. But what you might do is say, hey, the kids are home on Saturday. That's going to be family day. And then you've given it an identity. So instead of saying Saturday, which means really nothing other than when you exchange that verbiage with somebody else, if you say Saturday is family day, then you automatically funnel all of those family-oriented tasks, and you can categorize them as you wish. Family could be fun family, or family could be household chores. You funnel them towards that day. But for somebody else, Sunday might be that day, or maybe they work alternate work weeks and they have to work weekends, so maybe Tuesday is that day. So you always work backwards from your certainties, and then it's kind of like, I don't know if you – did you ever do logic puzzles as a kid?
Oh, I did.
Yeah, you remember those ones where it's like, you know, there's five types of – like there's five fruits and then there's five kids. And they go grocery shopping and you have to figure out what kid bought what fruit. And the clues kind of led you to that point. That's one of the tools I'm developing because people do struggle with this. I'm like, okay, well, do you have school-age children? Yes. Okay, well, what days are they home? Saturday and Sunday. Okay, so then those – other themes you've listed, so let's say podcasting and video work, are not good for those days. So you put X's there, and then eventually you come up with what your daily theme should be for the week. So that's number one. And then number two is you need to stick to those daily themes long enough to figure out if they're actually going to work. So you can't have Monday one week be admin and the next week be, you know, writing, and then the next week be, you can't run it that way. It's got to be Monday means this, Tuesday means this. Eventually you may have to shift it, like I had to when my kids went to school. My son used to, when he was home with me, on Wednesdays was daddy duty day and Friday was podcasting day. Well, when he went to school, Wednesday became a writing day and Friday remained podcast day. But by the time Friday would run around, I would be exhausted and I couldn't figure out why. And the reason, Jesse, is because I was working 5 days in a row for the first time in 5 years. So I had no energy. So all I did was swap the Friday and the Wednesday. The tasks followed. Again, they kind of funneled that way. And that's it. A lot of people will say to me, oh, well, this theme doesn't work this week, so I'm going to change it. I'm like, no, 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 no. All your daily theme means is it's your overarching focus. So some days will go to pot. Some days you will not be able to do all the stuff that falls into that theme. You're going to have appointments, meetings, you're sick. But the key is if you keep it stable, then for the next week, you at least know that that's when you're going to do it. Right. So that's how I view it, is work from your certainties. And then again, knowing that what your daily themes are consistently is a certainty. So don't deviate from those until you absolutely know you need to make a change. And journaling is one of the ways you can figure that out.
Yeah, I think journaling is really powerful, isn't it? We certainly, in the guys I work with, we all, you know, keep notes about how we're trying to be productive, what we've done, what we've achieved, and so on. And I've got a little tool that I use around that. But interestingly enough, I think what you're going to end up with this themed week, and I guess within the days, then you've got, as you say, your time blocking themes. It's almost like a default diary, isn't it? So you kind of know, okay, well, this is going to happen then. You know, barring some sort of calamitous event, I know I've put time aside for these important big rocks in my life. And then it's about, you know, letting the other things fill in around that, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like when we went to school, right? Like we went to school, class was, you know, you went to history class and it was in second period every day. And you're like, okay, well, that's what's going on that day. So, and once you got old enough, and you were old enough where you could say, I'm going to skip that class today, you knew that that's the class you were skipping. And you knew the next time you went to that class, it would be in there, right? So there's something about knowing that and the freedom to be able to choose that, which we didn't get in school so much.
Yeah.
But the freedom to be able to choose those is so valuable because we have more control over our days and our times than we'd like to admit. Because people will say, especially, again, people in appointment-based businesses, they'll say, well, I see clients all day and I can't find the pockets of time to do this stuff. If you've got the right themes, then those pockets of time will present themselves in your mind. You'll see them. They'll be triggered by, okay, well, you know, I've got a block of time here, a block of time there. And then it also helps you create boundaries around when you might not want to have appointments. Like, for example, on Friday, I don't do coaching calls anymore. I used to, but I thought, you know what? I need to have a day where I have the ability to have deep work. And so I said, no more coaching calls on Friday. And what that does is mentally, by putting that in my scheduling program, which I think actually you gave me your link, but if it was my link, we wouldn't be talking right now normally because it's outside of my hours. But the point is that I know that when I wake up Friday morning, deep work day, There's one certainty. There's absolutely one certainty. No one can book a call with me. My calendar will have nothing in it unless I put it there. And if I put it there, then I'm not respecting my own boundaries and I have to live with that. So it's, again, all of this stuff boils down to time management. It's really a lot about energy management and understanding boundaries, because that's how you move your priorities and your intentions forward. So I think that journaling, like you said, it's a very powerful tool, allows you to do that. And having these defaults, having this idea that, okay, Monday means this, Tuesday means this, and being able to deviate from it every once in a while because something goes awry and then being able to come back to it, that's just as powerful as having them in place to guide you when you do have the time to do the stuff.
I can't speak highly enough of that system you've outlined there. And again, I take my hat off to you because you're obviously one of the pioneers of it. And I think it's fantastic. It works brilliantly. So anyone listening to the show right now, just mark the spot in the audio because you'll want to come back and listen to that because there's some absolute gems of wisdom in that. What I wanted to also talk to you about, Mike, as well is, you know, it's one thing to put the time aside, but how do you then, you know, I suppose, get every drop of productivity out of that time? How can you become more effective in terms of not just managing your time and putting those blocks of time aside? How can you be utilizing that time for maximum output?
So there's a couple of ways to do this that I promote. One of them is to go beyond just theming your days and theme your months. So if you want to have a major goal or project that you want to move forward, you can say this month means this. So for example, the month of March for me is building relationships month. So everything that I do in my daily theme, so if it's admin day on Monday and I say, okay, well, what admin tasks do I want to do? I could get stuck there. If I have a list of 40 things, I could get stuck. So one way to move forward with that list is to say, okay, well, what's my monthly theme? Oh, my monthly theme is relationships. Okay, well, I want to email some people because that's one of the things that I wanted to do is email some people to bring back some relationships into the spotlight. And then all of a sudden that 40 tasks maybe melts down to 10 or 20. So that's one way. So monthly themes are really powerful and they are basically, again, they help you funnel your focus. But another thing that I promote, and I talk about this in the Productivity is Playbook, and I've talked about this with coaching clients, is mode-based work. So when you are writing down your tasks, to know instead of always working by project, which is, again, what we were taught in school and how we're taught to work is, hey, we have this project, let's work on it. The problem with doing that, it's kind of like going into the grocery store with a plan of what you're going to eat for the week and shopping by day of the week instead of by category of grocery. It's very ineffective to say, I'm going to buy 5 different types of meat for 5 days of the week and make 5 trips to the meat department. You would never do that. But we work like that all the time. Again, with your tools, it'd be like, I'm trying to speak with having very little, maybe you can draw on some experience, but it'd be like having the wrong tools in front, like having the tools in the wrong spot and consistently having to go back and get them because you're working on a particular project instead of saying, oh, these are the tools I need for this particular job, or I'm going to use the drill and do all the drilling right now and then go in and use the mirror. And I mean, I've been to the dentist often enough to know exactly when the tools come into play. But you're going to do them, you know what I mean? You're going to use them at the appropriate times. You're going to try to batch those things in a lot of cases, right?
comes down to efficient workflow. And one of the things that we do in dentistry is, you know, for me, when I pick up the handpiece, the drill, I try not to put it down until I'm done, because that act of picking it up, putting it down, picking it up, putting it down, it takes energy, it takes time, it takes focus. So, you know, my staff are fairly well trained to know that, you know, if I'm pausing, that I'll be perhaps asking for something, but I do try and minimize that toing and froing. You're absolutely right. Spot on.
Right, right. And so the different categories of modes that I teach people, because I believe there's five categories of them, and every mode needs an action, right? Like if you're going to buy groceries, well, what do you need to do to buy groceries? Like you can't, like, and what most people do is when they write their to-do list down, they just write a list and then they're cherry picking it, or they're doing it like, again, it's like going grocery shopping and just shopping by the way you wrote things down on the list. It'll take you forever to do it. So I propose that people, at the very least, I've got a thing called the daily map, where basically you write down four columns, an M, an A, a P, and an S. And at the very least, just do an M and an A. And it's, the A is for action, but the M is for mode. So buying groceries, the mode you might use, and one of the first categories of modes is theme-based mode. So if you have, let's say, family day and shopping falls into family day, then it would be family day. Oh, I'm in family mode. That means I should go buy groceries. So then you categorize them all together. Same thing with like audio video work. If you're going to record this podcast episode, you might say, okay, record episode with Mike. Well, what mode do I need to be in? I need to be in audio mode, which means that, okay, I'm going to group all those tasks. Because you, again, you don't want to pick up the microphone 12 times over the course of a week if you can do it once for an entire day, if you can make that happen, right? So there's that. Then the second type of category of mode is resource-based. And that's basically people, places, or things. So, hey, I want to email my subordinate something. Let's say Amy is your subordinate. And you say, hey, I want to talk to Amy about something. But what are all the things I need to talk to Amy about? Let me talk to her about all four of these things instead of emailing her four times, or instead of interrupting her four times. Or I need to do this at the garage. So the garage is the location. So let me see all the things I can do while I'm in the garage. Or I'm going to open up Gmail right now. What are all the things I can do inside of Gmail, or what are all the things I can do inside of Word? So that's a resource-based mode. Then there's one that a lot of people struggle with because they don't really know that they should use it, and it's energy-based modes. So things like, what's going to take a lot of energy? What's going to take little? And this is where you can really personalize it. I have a client who I've been working with, and he's a sports fan, and he was struggling with some of the tasks that were really easy. Like he was doing the big ones, which is great, but the little piddly ones were kind of just piling up on him, and they were weighing, you know, and of course those are the ones that most people want done, even though they're like, you know, they're so minor. And so what I said is, I said, these things don't take much energy, do they? And he said, no. I said, you know, you're a basketball fan. He said, yeah. I said, what happens when like a team is way ahead in basketball and they put on their third stringers or whatever? It's called garbage time, right? Like it's like, hey, we're so far ahead, we call these garbage time baskets or whatever. I said, create a mode called garbage time. And that's when those tasks go in. And so what he's done is he's batched them under garbage time and he's getting them done now. He's got one called prime time, which is for when his energy's at his highest. So, and you could follow Cal Newport's deep work, shallow work. So you could use deep work for high energy, shallow work for low energy. You could use full focus or brain dead, high energy, low energy. But we need to do this because there are a lot of, I mean, I don't know, are you a morning person?
I'm a night owl. I prefer to, left to my own devices, and of course it's different now that I have children, but left to my own devices, I'd probably sit up till, you know, midnight, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, and then get up at 10.
And I'm the same. So you're probably not going to want to do the high energy stuff in the morning, right? You're going to want to do lower energy stuff because you want to ease into your day. So I look at my day and I say, you know what? I'm not up to speed yet. Let me look at all the low energy tasks that I can do. And doing those low energy tasks actually builds up momentum because you're not really using a lot of willpower. And then at the end of the day, you're going to use it. So energy based ones are great. Then there's activity based modes, which is the other A, which is anything ending in ing. So studying, reading, shopping, errand running, money managing. So anything that's a verb. So, hey, I'm going to do some reading right now. I've got a book. What do I want to read? Oh, look, here's the 8 books I want to read. Oh, my Netflix queue. I want to watch a movie right now. Well, what are all the movies I want? Let's go into movie watching, you know, mode and see all those. You can get really granular with it if you want. And then the final one is time-based. So that's the amount of time you think it'll take to complete a task. And this one gets a bit tricky. So you don't want to use any more than 3. I like to use 5-minute, 15-minute, and 25-minute because of a Pomodoro technique. And so, yeah, so I can say, if I have a half hour between two meetings, instead of me going into email by default, what I could say is, you know what, let me see how many 5-minute tasks I can do in the next 30 minutes. And I look at the 5-minute mode tasks and I see all of them, or how many 15-minute mode tasks. And by the way, the acronym for those 5 category of modes is TREAT: theme, resource, energy, activity, time, because when you work that way, it's a treat to work.
It actually is, isn't it? Because I'm just listening to you describe them, going, wow, that's really cool. And I'm making notes madly as we go.
And here's the thing, is that by using a daily map or working this way, is that it doesn't mean you can never work by project, because there are times when you do need to work by project, make no mistake. But it gives you another way to work, a more natural, more human way to work. So instead of you always working by project, you could say, you know what, I'm going to work by mode. And when you work by mode, you actually are the closest you can get to multitasking, because if you pick up the phone and you're in phone mode and you call all the people that you need to call, chances are you're going to move 1, 2, 3, 4 projects forward at once just by going through that mode. So that's something else to keep in mind.
I think
that's,
again, really solid gold advice there for anyone listening. Just, you know, making the most of those themes, getting everything, you know, planned out, and utilizing that treat technique, I think is going to be, you know, really beneficial to everyone listening. Mike, I wanted just to change tack for a second, because, you know, obviously, you know, the space that you hang around in, you know, obviously you hang around lots of business people, entrepreneurs and so on, and given your expertise in productivity, I'm sure that you would have seen all sorts of, you know, myths and, you know, perhaps even poor pieces of advice handed out when it comes to productivity. But when it comes to that advice, what do you think is kind of the most common myth or misconception, or even just downright poor advice that gets peddled around as though it's fact?
The hottest one right now, there's two, but I'll give you both, but I'll say the hottest one right now is put everything on your calendar. It came from a bunch of people, you know, but one of the things that, and I interviewed Kevin Cruz for my podcast, and he talked about this in his book, and him and I have had some good conversations about it. Actually, it's not contentious or anything like that, but the idea is that, you know, when people say the most successful people only put their things on their calendars, they don't work by to-do list. That's not true. In fact, the reason that they can use their calendar more often than the to-do list is because they've got other people doing things for them more often than not, number one. And number two, they use their calendar kind of like the way I've just been speaking of. They block out the time for those overarching focal points. They don't schedule the minutiae. They schedule the, you know, again, that mode. So they'll say, hey, I'm going to go into writing mode right now. And that's the overarching focus. But the details of the day go inside the to-do list. Because if you just have writing written down from 3 to 5 o'clock, what are you going to write about? Like, but the monthly theme can help, but only to a point, right? So that's a big myth. People need to understand that the calendar serves a role in time management and productivity, and so does the to-do list. It's about making sure that they speak to each other, you know, they work together in harmony. One serves one purpose, one serves the other, and they should both work together. I think the other myth, which I think you'll enjoy hearing, is that the idea that you have to get up early in the morning to be productive.
I'm so delighted to hear that.
Such a load of crap. And, you know, I mean, there are people like Dr. Michael Bruce, who wrote The Power of When. He's what he calls a wolf. So if you've read that book, and it's a fantastic book for anyone who wants to know their chronotypes, is he doesn't talk about early birds and night owls. He has 4 different chronotypes. And I won't spoil it for you. Yeah, I think you should get the book. But the one that we're wolves, that's what we are, Jesse. We're wolves. So we're the and what he talks about in the book is when the ideal time is for people to do certain things. So like for us, the best time for us to work out is like at 6 or 6:30 in the evening. That's the best time for us to work out because of the way our energy is. And honestly, he's even saying that early risers should work out later in the day. And there's a reason behind that as well, which he shares in the book. But I remember being on a panel with Hal Elrod, who wrote The Miracle Morning, and Laura Vanderkam, who wrote What the Most Successful People Do Before Breakfast, and Craig Jarrow, the Time Management Ninja. We're all on a virtual panel. And the moderator, Dan Gold, friend of mine, asked everybody when they did their stuff and what time they got up early. And Laura was up at 7, so she's a bit more normal now. Craig was up at 5, and Hal was up at 3.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I know. And you know, more power to all the, I mean, again, it's your own body clock. You got to listen to it. But he asked when all these people got stuff done, and they walked through their day. And I said, well, and he said to me, he came to me and he said, well, when do you get your stuff done? I'm like, the night before. Like, I get all that. So as long as you're proactive and you're a wolf or a night owl, it's fine. So it has nothing to do with whether you get up early or late. It has to do with what you do with the time you're awake in the first place. So that doesn't matter. If you screw around from 3 to 7 in the morning, then you're no further ahead than the person who stays up till, you know, midnight and does the same thing. Right. So It's about what you do with the time that you have versus when you decide you're going to like get up or go to bed. I think you have to trust and listen to your body clock. And in his book, Dr. Bruce says that, you know, the body clocks change, and we all know that to be true too. So I think those are the two worst pieces of advice that I see. Schedule everything on your calendar. It's such a dangerous thing because if something goes wrong, then your whole day falls apart like a house of cards. And then secondly, only morning people are really productive and night owls are not. That's, again, not true in
the
slightest.
I'm so glad to hear that, well, both of those myths, but as you said, that last one in particular, because you read so much about, you know, the most successful people getting up at, you know, goodness knows what time. And in all honesty, Mike, I tried so hard to do that. I gave it a red hot go, but I just couldn't do it. I'm so delighted to hear that, you know, my biorhythm is quite okay and I can work within that.
And you know what? I was watching Tim Ferriss on The Tonight Show when he was on The Tonight Show, and it was such a, I mean, first off, Tools for Titans. I don't know if you've read that book. It's great. And there's lots of stuff in there that talks about people who you wouldn't think are like late risers, and they are. But he talks about how he's like, you know, some people are up at the crack of dawn or before the crack of dawn. And he says, I'm the guy that'll stay up till 1 a.m, get up at 10. And I'm like, thank you. Because I could probably have conversations with Tim because we're both, our body clocks are almost aligned perfectly. But yeah, it's just, so again, that myth drives me nuts. And I'm glad that more people like Dr. Bruce and Tim Ferriss and others are stepping up to say, nope, not true, because it can be a real – some people don't have a choice either. If their work hours are different or they want to build their side business, they don't have a choice to do that kind of stuff. So yeah, I think that that's a big one that we need to dispel as quickly and as honestly as possible.
I agree. One of the things I'm really curious to talk about, because we've just touched on Tim Ferriss in his book, Tools of Titans, and in the book he talks a lot about morning rituals, or rituals when you get up, I suppose, is probably a better way, rituals to start the day. Do you have any particular rituals to start your day to get you in the right headspace or get you moving?
Yeah, and actually it's funny because I have an evening ritual too, which I believe is more important than the morning ritual. But I'll share my morning one with you first. So I am, again, as mentioned, not a morning person. So I need as much self-automation put in place before that. And what I mean by that is that I need to make sure that everything is set up for me so that as I make my way through the first hour of my day, that I don't have to do much thinking. So when I wake up in the morning, I use Sleep Cycle as my alarm clock so I don't get jarred out of bed. It follows my rhythms. And I also, for Christmas, got one of those Philips light-up alarm clocks, so it, like, the sun blasts my face. And then I get up, I make an AeroPress coffee or a Bulletproof. So I do Bulletproof once a week on Sundays, but every other day I do AeroPress coffee, decaf actually. And then, I don't need the caffeine. It's weird. And then I have a Nutribullet shake, so a Nutriblast that I've prepared the night before that's in the fridge, and I just pour water in it and I make that. Then I go downstairs, depending on the day. If it's a work day, I will go downstairs and drink my coffee and drink my breakfast while I read my RSS reader for about 25 to 30 minutes. If it's not a work day, I will do the same thing, but I'll do it upstairs. So that way I'm not like, you know, saying, goodbye, family, I'm going to my office. And then what I do after I'm done that, the reading, is I look and I have a little titanium board as I walk in my office, like a titanium whiteboard. And on it, I've written my three absolutes from the night before. And sometimes there are three real heavy duty ones, tasks that I want to get done. And some people might call them three big rocks or three MITs. And
that's most important things.
Yeah, most important things. And so then what I will do is before I open Todoist or Asana, which are the two task apps I use, one is the latter is for my team-based stuff and Todoist is for my own stuff. I will do one of those tasks. So whether it's, you know, sometimes it's just simple as sharing a blog post. Other times it's as simple as, you know, it's sometimes a bit more complicated, like, you know, setting up a webinar or writing something. And then once I've done one of those absolutes, I'll then go into Todoist and Asana and kind of assess my day. And then I'm off to the races. My evening routine, what I do is I will go into Todoist because that's where I have my absolutes kind of lined up. I will make sure I have three absolutes for the next day. I will then write them down on the titanium board. I will then journal in day one. And this, by the way, this end of day ritual is happening normally at around midnight. And then what I will do is write in my journal. I normally have a picture in there or something to prompt me. And then I will close my laptop and I will leave my office, shut the door. And that's the end of me being in the office for the day. And then I'll like read normally a paper book. I used to listen to audio. I'll either listen to an Audible book. Right now I'm listening to The Undoing Project by Michael Lewis. So it's a really good book. And then, or I'll read a paper book. I won't read an ebook or anything like that, because I want the light. And this is something you learn from people like Dave Asprey and those guys. Tim Ferriss talks about this too. And then I will go to bed by around 12:31 in the morning, and then I'm back up the next day. Normally, I don't normally get up till about 8:30. That's kind of my beginning of my day. And that's, I believe that part of the evening routine is, once I've closed the office doors, when I go upstairs, I prep those shakes and I make sure that everything is ready for the next day. So it's almost like, again, it's like clockwork, because otherwise my day just, it goes off the rails if I don't have a good morning start, because it's just, my brain isn't ready to go until like closer to 10 o'clock to really get going.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, I'm just kind of relating this back to dental practice for a second, because, you know, we're talking about our personal waking up routines and all the rest of it, but it's exactly the same when, you know, dentists or their staff walk into a practice. They've got a start of day routine and an end of day routine. And essentially all you're saying, what you're saying really powerfully, is that that is such a good routine that we should be taking into our personal lives, automating that, minimizing the risk of getting off to the wrong start or finishing the wrong way for the day. And I really love that. I think it's really brilliant and excellent advice.
Well, and the other thing you need to do is, as you add to, once you get parts of the routine down, you can add to it. So like, I never used to do the shakes at night, but then I got the rest of the routine down and then I added to it. So it's, again, and there was an article recently from Laura Vanderkam. She shared it. I don't know if it was her that wrote it, but said, you can only really, quote, multitask once you've mastered some aspect of it. So it's kind of like, if you're going to work out, like if you're going to do I have a rowing machine now. I can't focus. I can't listen to an audiobook or do anything like that until I physically knew how to actually row properly. Once I knew how to row properly and the rhythm was down, then I could say, okay, now it's time to listen to a book, because I'm not going to screw up the rhythm. So again, same thing with routines. You can stack, really all routines and rituals are habits stacked one upon each other. So if you want to add meditation to your routine, get the rest of it down, then add meditation. And I do meditation at various points throughout the day. So that's just another point I want to add, is that, stack those habits to make rituals, but, know your limits again, like kind of say, okay, I'm going to do these three things to start, and then I'll add a fourth later and a fifth. And your morning routine could be as simple initially as making your bed. Like, it doesn't have to be anything major, but having something to, as a touchstone for your day, as a pillar to start your day, and to end your day, is critically important.
Yeah, I really like that. I'm curious as well, because again, coming back to Tim Ferriss's book, in that book he observed that a lot of people meditate. Well, I like to meditate as well. And I like to do it actually at the end of the day as much as anything. Do you have a time of day, this is perhaps not relevant to the broader topic of habits and rituals, but I'm just curious to ask, do you have a particular time that works best for you?
Whenever the kids drive me nuts.
Dad's going to his happy place.
I've got a six-year-old redheaded boy who likes to give me guff every once in a while. So I think it just depends. I think that for me, it is later in the day. It's after lunch, or, maybe even just before dinner. I find it to be calming. The great thing about meditation is, once you start doing it, I've got a Muse. I picked up a Muse headband. I used to use Headspace, but I've got Muse now. And it initially, when you start, it seems like it takes, like you're there forever. Like, it's just, the silence is like just unbearable. But then eventually, as you practice more, and it's really a practice, like the 7, 12, you can get up to, like, I'm up to, I think, 20 minutes now, and it seems like no time has passed. So I think you get to that, but it takes, again, deliberate practice to do that stuff. So I would say, for me, it's definitely not a morning thing, because I just fall asleep again.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. The same. I was going, I can't do it, then I'll be back in bed 5 seconds flat.
For me, it's generally like, I'm going to go meditate, like, as soon as maybe either just before dinner, after my wife gets home, or if I've cooked dinner or whatever, or, after, sometimes it's after the kids have gone to bed. Because what happens is that my day, because the kids get home at around 3 o'clock, so most of the days of the week, I'm actually the one that's with them after that. Only on a couple days of the week am I actually continuing to work, because my wife's home. But no matter what, from like 5:30 to like 8:30 most nights, it's the whole family's doing stuff together. So what I'll normally do is meditate once I'm coming out of that state. So it's like the kids are off to bed. I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm going to go meditate right now, or after my wife's in bed. So I would say generally it's in the late afternoon, early evening, and sometimes it goes into the later part of the evening, but that's generally when I do it.
Oh, that's really cool. Hey, Mike, I read a blog post of yours called The 5 Zeros, and I really, really liked the post, and I hope I'm not putting you on the spot, but I was wondering if you could talk us through the concept of, you know, the five zeros in terms of cleaning desks and all those sorts of things, and I guess finishing the day really well.
I remember it, but I didn't write it. Timo did. Timo Kiander did. It's a guest post, but I definitely do know what you're talking about. It's one of the actually more popular posts that we have on the site. And Timo just actually is, it's funny you mentioned that. Timo, he's productive super dad. He's just gotten back into the game again. He took a bit of a break from writing about productivity. He's like, I couldn't stay away, so I'm back. But what he talks about is the 5-0. So he says, you know, like, get your task list down to zero by the end of the day. So making sure that your list is effective enough and reasonable enough so that you can get it down to zero. Inbox zero. He's a fan. There's a lot of people who are fans of email inbox zero. I'm more of a fan of inbox today, which is get down to the current day. Because a lot of people I work with, if they did just focus on inbox zero, they wouldn't get any of the bigger work done. So I say, look, just get to today. Tab zero, processing all open tabs to zero, which is, you know what, that shouldn't be as hard as it is for people at this point. There's so many tools out there that you could say, oh, I'm going to bookmark that tab or I'm going to save that for later. But a lot of people just leave open tabs. If anything, on Chrome, I have 3 pinned tabs, and they're all my task management applications. So Asana, Trello, which we use for the podcast, and Todoist, which is what I use for my. Those are the only things that are pinned. Every other, like when I close Chrome and reopen it, those are the only 3 things that are ever open. Input zero, so all your notes. So if you're using Evernote or Apple Notes or OneNote or Bear or whatever, make sure that all of those are processed. And when I talk, again, the daily map, which is one of the things I talk about. And even there's a post I've written called the strike through system, and it's really super simple where, hey, if I took care of this note or this task before it ever left this piece of paper, I cross it off, just a line through it. If it's something that I've moved to like the larger, more digital or more permanent apparatus, so let's say I moved it to like a bullet journal or my master planner or to Todoist or Asana or to Evernote, then I put an arrow through it, so a line with an arrow. So it looks like, hey, I've moved this. If I've decided not to do anything with it, because when you capture a lot, eventually you have stuff in there. You're like, why did I even write this down? This is stupid. I do it like a squiggly line, like I'm going to destroy this thing. And that's it. And that way I can look at all my notes, tasks, anything that I've written down. And if it has a line through it, an arrow through it, or a squiggly line through it, I know it's been taken care of in some way, shape, or form. Either it's done, deferred, or delegated, or deleted. And if it doesn't have anything through it, then I need to make a decision on it. So that's kind of how you can get to input zero. And then work desk zero, which is cleaning your desk after you've stopped working. And I think that's another one. So he talks about this whole process. It's a pretty lengthy post too.
It is.
He talks about how you can get down to, again, the tab zero is really important, the input zero. And he's got some stuff there as well. And he talks about how to make them stick. And he's got a checklist too. I think it's still there. Put the link to it in the show notes, and there's a lot there. But I think that the obsession with zero is healthy to a point, but you need to be getting to zero for the right reasons. And if I was looking at this, the zeros that you should have no problem getting to, or you should strive for, are task list zero, tab zero, which should be easier, and input zero, and then inbox today. And I would say work desk. For me, I mean, my desk needs some cleaning right now, I'll tell you that. It's probably work desk once, like for me, it's once per week. It's always kind of been that way. You know, it's like, I mean, I have my inbox that's empty, but there's some stuff like tomorrow is deep work day. So I've got a lot of planning stuff out on my desk. So as long as the intention is there and you've got a way to pay attention to it, then you're on the right track. If you don't have, and this is why what a lot of people will say to me is like, what's the difference? I'm like, well, intention without attention, it's powerless, right? I mean, you could say, I am going to write a book, and then you have no way to make sure that you write that book, then good luck with writing that book. And attention without intention is directionless, which is what a lot more people struggle with. Like, I'm going to pay attention to this email. Well, why? Oh, well, you know, because that's what I should. Well, but why? What's the intention behind it? Do you want to get to inbox there? Do you want to make sure that you make sure your email is handled accordingly? How do you do that? Do you use a tool like SaneBox to make sure that only the right emails are coming through? Do you use filters? Like, how do you do that? Well, you know, I just want to get through email. Again, that's kind of directionless. So you want to marry intention and attention together. And this post by Timo definitely helps you do that in some respects, for sure.
It's a fantastic post indeed. And we'll certainly put a link to it in the show notes, because there's so much, as you say, there's so much in it. And of course, you know, people will take from what they need to for their own selves. Hey, Mike, you've been really, really generous with your time. Can I impose on you for just one last question?
Absolutely.
Because I know it's late at night there, and I know you're probably just coming into your prime And
yeah, we're getting into prime writing time now.
Okay, we'll be quick.
No, this is good. This is good. You've given me lots of stuff. You mentioned treat technique, and I've never called mode-based work that. So I'm like, oh, that's it. I'm calling it that now. So there you go.
Cool. So what I wanted to ask is, you know, the ability to say no. And yeah, you hear a lot of people say, oh, I'm on the no train or whatever it is. And I've also heard, I'm probably going to horribly misquote Warren Buffett, but I'm led to believe he's got a quote that, you know, essentially poor people say yes to everything. You know, pretty rich people say no to most stuff, but the billionaires say no to just about everything. In your particular life, do you have a system of filters for how you say yes or no to things?
The irony of this question is you just asked me to stick around and I said yes. But yes, I do. So for my year, every year I choose three words, and this is something I learned from Chris Brogan. I'm kind of modifying this a little bit in the years ahead, because I have my own way that I've kind of. The great thing about building a productivity approach is you kind of figure out what works and what doesn't. And I think I've come up with something that's a bit of an alternative to this, but I've got three words. And what the three words do is they're kind of like my models for the year. So they're like, it's my measuring stick. So everything I do is held up to those three words. And this year, my three words are redesign, rebuild, and reclaim. So they apply both to work and to life. And so when someone says, hey, will you work on this project? I say, okay, well, let me hold it up against these three words. So will it help me redesign, you know, my work situation or my life situation in the way that, and I've got, you know, deeper meaning behind that. So, I don't want to dive into it too deeply, but if it hits all three of those words, it's something that I will look at. If it hits two of the three words, I'll still look at it, but it'll get bumped by something that hits all three. If it only hits one of the three words, I'm not doing it.
Cool.
So it's kind of a, you know, Derek Sivers has this, and I'm sure you've seen it. If it's not a yeah, or if it's not a hell yeah, it's a no. And I love that concept. And I think that the one thing that you touched on, which I think is very important, is you need to figure out where your boundary is and stick to it. And again, if you don't respect your own boundaries, nobody else will. And that's why I think I leverage technology in a way that helps me with this. So that's why when people try to book an appointment with me, they have to go through a scheduling system, because I'd probably just say yes to everything. You know, I had an interview scheduled with someone who was really prominent and I had to cancel it. And I said, you know, I could have come back and said, well, when do you want to do it? And instead I said, no, I'm going to give him the link. He hasn't booked it again and I don't know if he will. But the point is that if you don't respect your own boundary, you cannot expect anybody else to. So set boundaries and make them reasonable. And make them your own, make them personal. So if you say, hey, you know what, Saturday, I mean, I'll give you a great example. Today, as we're recording this, I was asked to be on a panel and they said it takes place on a Saturday. And I immediately said no, because that's family day. And here's the thing is that it's the timing. So I look at my wall calendar. I have a now year calendar. It's one of the calendars that I built with the New Year folks at New Year. And I looked at it, 28th of February, we're literally leaving for the Philippines like that night. So if it was like another Saturday or whatever, I might consider it. I'd run it by my wife, because if it pays, you know, sometimes I want to do that. But I could literally look at my calendar and my daily themes and my yearly words and my monthly themes. And, you know, say yes or no based on that. But you have to have those parameters in place. You have to put a framework in place, because frameworks foster freedom. I know a lot of people get, oh, I don't want to be locked down. It's too rigid. It doesn't have to be rigid. If it's too rigid for you, change it. But don't eliminate it. Like, just make alterations, because you need a framework. A calendar is a framework. It's 28 through 31 days, and they're squares. And you can only fit so much in those squares. So make sure you're fitting the right things in those squares that matter to you, because, you know, life is short. It's funny. Whenever I train, I'm training coaches right now. And one of the things that we do when I train them is I say, this is one exercise that we do with our clients. I say, I want you to do a capture of all the stuff that's in your head right now, and you have a minute to do it. And they think, oh my God, only a minute? And man, if you do nothing if you're completely silent for a minute, it is a really long time. Like, if you put a minute of dead air in here right now, people would go, what's going on? What's wrong with it? Like, what's wrong with it? But it hangs there. But we don't think about it that way. We look at things too large, and sometimes we look at them too small. We don't have a good filter for this kind of thing. So better to set these boundaries up in advance, so that way you can say yes. And I mean, let's face it, if someone was to say to me, if you were to say, hey, Mike, let's do a webinar in March, I could say no right now because I know what's going on in March. If you said, hey, Mike, let's do a podcast recording in July, I would say no because I'm not doing podcast recordings in July or August. And no doesn't have to, by the way, no doesn't have to mean never. It just means no right now. Not yet or not right now. So, but it's important to do it because my friend Patrick Crone, really smart guy, says, and it's a great quote, saying no is saying yes to other things.
That is a great quote. Fantastic quote, actually. I really like that. That's
just make sure you attribute it to Patrick.
I will. I think as Marie Folio would say, that's a tweetable.
Yeah, Creative Live did it once. They're like, here's what Mike said. I'm like, I didn't say that. Patrick did.
No, I will attribute it to the right person. That's really cool. Hey, Mike, listen, you have been extraordinarily generous with your time today, and I'm very grateful that you have taken the time out of your day to come and spend some time and hang out on our show with us. You've been, as I said, really generous, but on top of that, you've been really knowledgeable and some really useful practical tips. There are loads and loads of, you know, stuff that people can take into their work tomorrow and apply, not just their work but their life, of course, and just make their life A, more productive, but B, more enjoyable as well. So I really want to say thanks.
No problem at all. And you know, I mean, I think if people want to learn more about me, I'll give you guys a special little link that people can go to and learn more. Just go to productivius.com/savvydentist. And there'll be a bunch of stuff there for people to check out and learn more about me.
We'll definitely put that link in the show notes. And again, thanks so much, Mike. Enjoy your evening. Enjoy your end of night ritual and your meditation that will surely come. And again, once more from all of us here at Savvy Dentist, really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jesse.
I really hope you enjoyed that episode of the show with Mike Vardy. Mike shared an enormous amount of tips and tricks and tools to make your day not just more productive, but really more enjoyable as well. And the whole aim of that is not just to make your business succeed financially, which of course it is, but it's also to make sure you enjoy the journey along the way. So we're aiming to have that, you know, obviously that profitability, but enjoyment there as well. And Mike shared some very, very useful practical tips that you can take into your practice on Monday and apply for great success. We had a conversation, Mike and I, about some tools and resources that we thought would be helpful for dentists to get the most out of this show. And what Mike's very generously done is he's packaged up a series of his tools and resources, and he's putting them together for the listeners of the show. So if you want to take advantage of that, it's for free. All you need to do is head across to theproductivityist.com/savvydentist and grab those tools and resources that Mike has specifically put together for listeners of the show. I'd really encourage you to do that because I know they're great resources and will really help you in your practice. We'll put a link to the site there in the show notes. So all you need to do is click on that and you'll be right as rain. So again, I hope you've enjoyed today's show. I hope you've taken some great notes. And until next week, have a good week and we'll see you on the flip side. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.